will now hear the matter of BSU v. SUFAC this 21st day of October. This is a budget appeals case. The court has granted certiorari on the basis of procedural violations. This case was not accepted on the basis of viewpoint neutrality. Presiding over this case is the SGA court, myself, Chief Justice Ryan Mock, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Justice Ben Schmidt, Justice Melanie Shapinski, Justice Priya Dorgu, and Justice Tabitha Nowak. Just a quick note on decorum. The court will be referring to the parties by their last names. It's a sign of respect. They will then refer to us as either Justice Mock or Your Honor, depending on whatever they prefer. Just a note for the gallery, you have one duty during this case, and that is to remain silent at all times. The court will not acknowledge any address to the court or any address to either member delivering oral arguments. First on the agenda is two motions that the respondent has filed with the court. At this time, we'll have Ms. Galligan explain her motions, and then we will hear her arguments as to why we should grant them. Ms. Galligan.
First motion is to respectfully request that the court dismiss all quotes taken from the committee as a whole. If you refer to Exhibit A and B, the April 17th minutes, May minutes, and March 1st May minutes highlighted our section when the committee motioned to enter committee of the whole, and also highlighted are the sections of quotes being used by the petitioner as evidence. The reason we request this evidence to be dismissed is because committee of the whole is a free and open discussion by the SUFAC board. This discussion is very quickly and is difficult to record all of the statements by the administrative assistant. What the minutes do reflect is a summary of part of the board's discussion when in committee, and when these minutes and quotes are taken out of context, the meaning can be lost by the reader.
Ms. Gallagher, is the issue here whether or not it's accuracy or is it the completeness of the minutes that's being disputed?
It's accuracy and completeness.
Okay.
These minutes are not a transcript. They're not a full statement of what those members exactly said. You can't take a reason that quotes can't be taken from them because they're not full out statements of board members. There's little outline sections. What we use the minutes for is for the board to go back and remind themselves of what was being discussed.
Were the minutes approved by the board at a subsequent meeting?
Yes, the minutes were approved as a summary.
And at that time, were the board members able to object to approving the minutes?
Yes.
Do you have any further documentation of the votes that were cast? If you're arguing that the minutes are incomplete and inaccurate, then do you have any other documents for the court to review the procedures that were followed or the votes that were cast?
Well, one thing that thing when taken out of context,
okay,
it's not a complete thought. It's not what the minutes are intended for. This is being used for what minutes are intended to provide official statements of those members. I mean, the members do have a moment to go back and say, this is what somebody records. Our administrative assistant records what the highlighted sections are. There's more to those conversations.
The question is, do you have any other documentation of the procedures or the minutes or the votes that were cast if we were to suppress the minutes that you had taken during committee of the whole?
Potentially, but I can't guarantee it because this is
during committee of the whole, there are never any votes taken. There's no motions that are carried except to end committee of the whole.
But the question is whether or not there's any other documentation of the procedure that was followed during committee of the whole.
Well, committee of the whole is a discussion. So the board goes into committee of the whole to discuss an issue. So let's say the board motions to approve an item. So the board will make a motion to approve the item, and then when they're in discussion, the motion to approve, second, any discussion, That's when another member will motion to enter committee of the whole, which is then seconded, and then discussed, called the question. Committee of the whole starts at a certain time, and at that time, the board members just go to a free discussion about the topic that they have made a motion
on. At the time of committee of the whole, is that when you decide on how much is going to be allocated to committees? Or, excuse me, student organizations?
They discuss that topic.
Okay.
They'll go through, discuss the topic, what they, you know, see relevant, or what is cost-effective, or just it's a moment, it's the time for the board to discuss the request that they've already sent them. But then, when the board wants to approve and do a final vote on the issue, on the request, they must leave committee of the whole, through either the timeline, time is up, or they motion to exit committee of the whole, which is then followed by a second, and then, you know, discussion, call to question, and an acclamation, or a board vote, or something like that. And once they leave committee of the whole, then they're back into the normal.
It was also your discretion to take, or it was the reporter's discretion to take the minutes further than just the minimum that Robert's Rules lays out, though.
Yes.
Why shouldn't the court consider this if the minutes have been approved and it's a public document?
The minutes are approved as a summary, and it's a summary of what happened. It's just not a complete, they're being used as quotes. These people are being quoted, and it's not a complete thought. There's a lot of, you know, so-and-so said this, but it's not a full thought. And just reading through those minutes, you can tell that thought just ends, abruptly ends, and it's not a complete discussion either, because someone's comments obviously would have a follow-up discussion, and that's not fulfilled in the minutes.
Ms. Cohen, I have one question for you regarding the minutes. If, for instance, let's say that the minutes were to show that SUFAC had actually followed procedure, would it be your position to still allow the minutes to be considered in this case? I'm assuming that you would like the minutes to be considered in this case. Let me preface that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a public hearing, like you mentioned. All documents are public documents. The Secretary took it beyond Robert's Rules and decided to report part of the committee of the whole. If that is what they recorded and it's not an incomplete summary, then SUFAC, the burden is on them to provide evidence that something was said that would be contradictory to the evidence that was provided. If it's incomplete, that's really not the issue. If it's just what the evidence is in front of us, in public documents, we're entitled to in court, and the burden would then be on them to provide that evidence that would show that they did in fact use the procedure.
Do any of the other justices have questions regarding this matter? At this time, I'll entertain a motion to suppress the SUFAC minutes on March 1st and April 17th. Is that the motion?
March 1st.
Just March 1st. March 1st, taken during committee of a whole regarding the BSU budget for further consideration of this case.
I so move.
I'll second the motion.
At this time, we'll call the motion to question by means of a show of hands. Excuse me, is there any objection to calling to question? Let me backtrack here for a second. Is there any objection to calling this motion to question? By means of a show of hands, all those who favor the motion to suppress the SUFAC minutes. All those opposed to suppressing the SUFAC minutes. There's no abstentions. The motion fails 0-5. The SUFAC minutes will be considered in this case. Moving on to your second motion, Ms. Galligan, you have called the court, or you asked the court to suppress the FIRES guide to student fees funding and legal equality. What's the basis for this motion?
We respectfully request to suppress the evidence from FIRES guide of student fees and funding and legality equality on campus by Jordan Lawrence. FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, is a biased interest group whose mission is to protect students' rights in the college or university setting. In addition, the author, Jordan Lawrence, was the lawyer for Southworth, which Exhibit C is the OYES summary, and I've highlighted the respondent's lawyer, Jordan Lawrence, and the Supreme Court case, the respondent was Southwood. In addition, Jordan Lawrence assisted Southwood through the whole legal process, even continuing into the U.S. Court of Appeals Seventh Circuit 2002 decision. He was the lawyer for Southwood in that too. We bring this to your attention because this author obviously had a vested interest in this case and potentially had a biased opinion on the situation and could have interpreted the court opinion however they thought fit. Almost pay a lawyer to say anything you want them to say.
Ms. Cohen, what was your reasoning for using Fire's Guide instead of just citing the Court of Appeals decision?
Fire's Guide basically brought it to our attention.
Okay.
Brought the relevance of the case to our attention. Further arguments are going to be cited from the case itself.
Okay. Is there any further questions on this motion? At this time, I'll entertain a motion to suppress the Fire's Guide to student fees, funding, and legal equality on campus from further consideration of this case.
I'll motion to suppress the Fire's Guide from the quotes from the rest of this case.
Second.
At this time, I'll call the motion to question. Is there any objection to calling this motion to question? No objection. By show of hands, all those in favor of suppressing Fire's Guide from further consideration of this case. Any opposed? Motion is granted to suppress Fire's Guide, their interpretation of this case by a vote of 5-0. The third issue that we'd like to address is your final brief, Ms. Cohen, about the Court of Appeals decision about universities using unbridled discretion to allocate funds. That unbridled discretion, using unbridled, or an exercise of unbridled discretion, is in fact a violation of viewpoint neutrality. Now, the question here is kind of twofold, whether or not SUFAC can in fact exercise unbridled discretion, and whether or not we should consider viewpoint neutrality when we didn't grant certiorari based on viewpoint neutrality. So I guess I just want to know what your position is on this.
Well, viewpoint neutrality, though not the focus, is related.
Okay.
So infringements on procedure, the lack of proper procedure results in viewpoint neutrality. There's evidence of viewpoint neutrality, which therefore supports our argument about the infringement on procedure and the lack of proper procedure.
And what evidence do you have to provide the court about this unbridled discretion of SUFAC?
Yeah. Unbridled discretion was a term that was used by Fire. We cease to use that further. But
it's actually used in the Court of Appeals also, I want to make that distinction. So
okay.
It is in there.
Okay.
I think it's the vague standards that was up for discussion in Fire's Guide. That's what we will not consider.
So I just
want to
make sure that I understand the question.
Okay. You're alleging that SUFAC exercises unbridled discretion, which then violates viewpoint neutrality. This is consistent with the Court of Appeals case. The question is, what evidence do you have to support that claim that they exercise unbridled discretion?
Well, it's more of a lack of justification. It's a lack. The reason that unbridled discretion took place is because there are not proper guidelines. There's not a set of objective, clear, or consistent guidelines that SUFAC employs when making a decision about budget allocation. This leads to unbridled discretion, and it has been interpreted since the case that, since the Southworth case, that in order to ensure viewpoint neutrality, you must have these guidelines, and without them, it will lead to unbridled discretion. So our evidence is, as was in our affidavit of support, that...
Ooh.
Ooh. Yes.
They did that earlier, too. They didn't randomly turn off. Is there a twist back of the door?
I've been in this room before. It goes off when there's not a lot of motion.
Oops.
And it'll just keep
just
doing
the top
it.
Button. Just the top button. Okay.
Oh,
sorry about that.
In our first document that was submitted in our argument, we did take a large chunk of the minutes. Basically, when decisions were made, there was no reference whatsoever to any sort of guidelines, to any sort of procedure that was used. That is part of our evidence. Also, BSU was granted a lump sum versus being granted specific amounts.
I'm just going to interrupt you about that. The lump sum will be most likely discussed in the actual oral arguments.
Okay.
This is just about whether or not they have basically no policies that
right.
guide their decisions. Now, for the sake of time, I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Galligan or Mr. Kale. What evidence do you have? Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We also have used the SBA Constitution, the suicide bylaws, the minutes, and there is also no set of guidelines
okay.
in either document.
Okay. And how do you respond to this, Ms. Galligan or Mr. Kale?
Well, I guess I don't know if you want to discuss it now, but our whole argument is showing to our guidelines.
If you just want to reference something,
okay,
the
well
court
we have
has
guidelines.
The
I was going to say that Exhibit B in our oral argument is the standing established guidelines from May 1997, revised October 2004, and they have been recently revised September 2008. I submitted that in the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in some of the minutes, items that were not in committee of the whole, each chair of last year does present first that the board members should think about D-Day guidelines, and then also on D-Day, there is the D-Day guidelines. Also, in your packet of information, Exhibit G, Sue Kine, the advisor for D-Day, submitted a summary where she explained that SUFAC did place limits, guidelines, on during D-Day. In the minutes, those are obviously posted and for public viewing, and that's in there in March 1st minutes. Our SUFAC guidelines are on our website. They've always been there, to my understanding, since I've taken the position of chair. And they're in our office.
So they're made available to student orgs before D-Day.
Before D-Day.
And before they
also
before they make their budget also, or before they prepare
yes,
their budget.
Yes, they're on the website. You can look them up. I know that when I reviewed the last year's chair and vice chair's budget presentation, there was mention of the guidelines, specifically areas of how much is allowed to be requested. Committed request not to be $2,000 per fiscal year unless the board handles it case by case. And the board would have to have a two-thirds majority vote in order to overrule their own guidelines.
Is there a motion that you'd like to bring to the court regarding this?
Okay. Yes. We would like to motion to that respectfully request that the petitioner, that student union, final brief be dismissed on the grounds that it is a new allegation which alleges that SUFAC violates viewpoint neutrality. Also, this final brief should be dismissed due to the fact that the resources within this new allegation are unclearly cited and have been difficult for SUFAC to locate and dispute.
Well, I don't necessarily think this is necessarily a new allegation because this is a part of their second portion of their affidavit of support. I think they more or less elaborated on this particular matter. So if the motion were to be, I would guess that it would be a motion to suppress consideration of the second part that SUPAC violated Section 311 of the SJA Constitution, then it goes into unbridled discretion, and then also their final brief, based on the fact that you do not exercise unbridled discretion. I think that's how the motion would carry. That's how the court understands it. Is that how you understand this? Okay. Well, I'll entertain the motion anyway. So, at this time, I'll entertain a motion to suppress the final brief of BSU and the second portion of their affidavit of support relating to unbridled discretion and a potential violation of viewpoint neutrality.
Second motion.
This time I'll call the motion to question. Do any of the justices have an objection to calling to question?
Can I just speak to my second? Am I allowed to speak to my second?
Yeah.
I just wanted to, because again it was stated in the beginning of this hearing that the court accepted this case based on procedural violation, not viewpoint neutrality, which the final brief does go towards that side, so that's my second motion.
Okay. Is there any objection to calling a question? Objection? Okay. By means of a show of hands vote, all those in favor of suppressing the final brief and the second portion of BSU's brief. Motion passes 5-0. So we will not consider this a part of the proceedings. We will only consider the procedural aspect, the allocation of the lump sum, which you basically touched on. This is what the court needs to decide on. I just want to make it clear that the court feels, and we briefly discussed this in our meeting prior to this, that there is sufficient evidence that they have objective criteria that they have to follow. We realize that BSU may not have known about the criteria, but it's still there. So there isn't a potential for an exercise of unbridled discretion. I just want to make sure that you two understand this. All right, so we're going to move into the actual oral argument.
SUPAC respectfully requests to dismiss the appeal on the grounds that SGA and SUPAC are actively reviewing SUPAC bylaws and guidelines. There are two committees outside of SUPAC reviewing the bylaws, guidelines, and procedures. SUPAC itself has taken active steps to review their guidelines. We request that the appeal be dismissed due to the fact that SGA, the governing body of the students, is already handling a review of SUPAC.
I'll entertain a motion to dismiss the case at this time, based on...
I'll make a motion to dismiss the case based on SGA and SUPAC new committees investigating.
Second.
I'll call the motion to question. Do we have any objections to calling the motion to question? By a show of hands vote, all those in favor of dismissing this case from the court. All those opposed from dismissing the case. Motion fails 0-5. Now we will move into oral arguments. Just a few introductory comments before we move into this. We have already elapsed some of our time, so hopefully we'll make this as quick as possible. Justice Dargu wants to make quick statements regarding his participation of this case, and then I'd like to introduce the parties.
In the spring of 2007, I was secretary of the Black Student Union. And at the end of that semester, I got elected as the president of the BSU. So I was the president of the BSU throughout the summer, really didn't go to school or do anything like that, so I wasn't actively a president that made any difference. And at the end of the semester, I stepped down and handed over to Ms. Cole here, who's president of the BSU. Consequently, I stopped participating in all BSU activities, attending BSU meetings or doing anything with the BSU. And as a lay member of the BSU, I do receive email notifications about all their activities, but I don't respond to them. And my status with the BSU is the same as my status with the international club. I receive all their emails, but I don't respond to them. So I have no interest in this case. As such, I should make that clear. It's important that I point this out so we all know there is no conflict of interest. And as a result of my prior involvement with the BSU, and I have nothing to gain personally from the proceedings, so I don't think there is an issue of the appearance of a conflict of interest at all in this case. In light of this statement, I want to make it clear that I'll be participating in the proceedings, the deliberations, and all the votes that will be taking place. Thank you.
And one final comment about that. There's a Wisconsin statute that actually talks about this exact issue, and it is up to the justice or the judge to decide whether or not he wants to deliberate. He cannot step down from any other proceedings. It has to be from him, even as an appearance of conflict of interest. So I want to make that quite clear that there is no conflict of interest. Now I want to introduce the parties of this case representing the petitioner. We have Ms. Kathy Cohen, and I don't know your name because you are
Cedric.
And representing the respondent of this case is SUFAC, and we have Ms. Galligan and Mr. Kale. At the part of the board. So, at this time, we're going to hear oral arguments regarding procedure. Each party will have 15 minutes to give an oral argument. After 15 minutes are up, and I'll be keeping time, you will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal, and then we will move into questioning. The court has roughly 20 minutes for questioning, and then you'll give about a 2-minute closing statement. I'd like to start with the petitioner with oral arguments. Ms. Cohen.
Well, I originally brought this matter to our attention. Obviously, we received substantial cuts. We were cut 50% of our budget. But when looking at the allocations of all three orgs, it was very inconsistent. If you look at the actual percentages that were allocated to each club, they range from as low as 13% to as high as 100%. Now, SUFAC has claimed that cuts were across the board. However, 22 of the 49 organizations that requested money were granted 100% of the funding. So we wanted to appeal on the basis that we were not given sufficient justification for appeal or for our cuts. There were no references to any kind of procedure, any kind of guidelines. There were guidelines in place as far as allocations for food could not exceed X amount of dollars. But what we were concerned with is what steps are you taking individually with each organization to come to the amount that you are giving for these different groups. Unfortunately, we're not able to pursue the aspects of the lack of procedures that we saw, but we, BSU's budget was handled differently. It was not given the attention that it deserved, that we are entitled to, the line-by-line attention. SUFAC has mentioned in their meeting and in the minutes that they have a standard of line-by-line review. Now, line-by-line review would mean that they would go individually through each section, each event, each thing put in the budget and make their decisions accordingly. That did not happen with the BSU. If you look at the minutes, the meeting minutes and affidavits, that was the only event that was getting explicit attention. It was decided after that to allocate BSU a lump sum of $2,000 for all contractual points on the budget. Now this is not consistent with how other budgets were allocated. Other budgets were allocated, each event was given their specific amount that would be spent on each event that would be granted. BSU did not receive $2,000. This is not only not adhering to the standard that they set for themselves, which they claim is just in the review process, but if it's not also in the process that is making the decisions and actual allocations, then we have no guarantees that it was reviewed line by line. What they presented in the minutes here shows only Fashion for Hope was considered, the rest of our contractual items were not, and we were granted a lump sum. This is inconsistent with how other budgets were handled, and we, the BSU, did not receive the proper attention to these things that we presented. Also, for four reasons, one of the, we did use the board of reasons for our final argument, but a different it is specifically mentioned in the board of reasons recommendation for a segregated fee review that lump sums are not granted. I wasn't here to bring up a specific point. We were going to take the route of the viewpoint neutrality and having specific laws.
You can reserve your time, and then we can come back to you. You have about 10 minutes left, so we could let Ms. Galligan and Mr. Kale speak for their allotted time, and then we can come back to you for your statement if you'd like. Ms. Galligan and Mr. Kale. This is your 15 minutes of whatever it is you'd like to talk about.
If it may please the court, the Segregated University Fee Allocation Committee is a student organization under Student Government Association, which, as stated in the CFAC bylaws, is responsible for the distribution of segregated fees and oversees their use. This responsibility must be carried out in accordance to the UW System Board of Regents policies, Wisconsin state law, federal court decisions, the SGA Constitution, CFAC bylaws, and CFAC guidelines. Every year, the CFAC board reviews three different forms of segregated fee requests. The first is non-allocable auxiliary budgets, budgets like the union, the dean of students, the crush event center, athletics. Those budgets make up 95% of all segregated fee use. The second form is allocable student organization budgets. These are budgets for the SEA, for the state, Habitat for Humanity, and the student organization who submit the budget. And also contingency requests. These requests are for funding for student groups that goes beyond their budget, and the requests are made for many different reasons. First, we would like to address the allegation of CFAC violating its own line-by-line standing rule. CFAC does not have a standing rule or formal guideline on this. What has been referred to are comments made in minutes of this line-by-line.
but what it is section by section. Exhibit A, the February 28th meeting minutes, section 9, highlighted in green in the announcement, the chair mentioned that stress once is placed on individual items, it's placed on the amount. So we're really looking at these budgets, at the amount of everything, what that total comes to. Exhibit B, March 1st meeting minutes, section 7, item D, due date procedures.
Sorry, what section?
Section 7, item B, due date procedures, right on the front. Informational items.
Right.
As you can also see, the chair said that everyone can, that you review, go through the budget as attached to the agenda, and that the board can go line by line. It was never voted on, it was never official, that they have to go line by line. But I'd like to point out that the board did go section by section or line by line. Exhibit C is a student budget. It's the Black Student Union's budget. The top sheets are, what the board sees. Starting sheet is the SME page. So when board sits down on D-Day, they'll start with this page, okay, and they will look at this. After making a motion to approve the budget in full, they'll move into Committee of the Whole, and when in Committee of the Whole, they start with this page for organization procedures. This line by line and section by section meaning that we refer to is just how we organize ourselves on that day. Every student budget was reviewed the same way. Every time a budget came before the board on D-Day, they sat with their budgets in front of them in their binders, and they started with S&E. And they discussed S&E, and then they came up with a total, moved on to capital or contractual items, came up with a total, moved on to food, came up with a total. If changes needed to be made on any of these things, made changes. But nothing was voted on until the end, until the final page of the total. This is the total we're voted on, okay? But every section was looked at, every single student organization. We'd also like to present that SUFAC did apply on D-Day two sets of guidelines. The first set of guidelines is Exhibit D, the SUFAC guidelines that were revised October 2004, and I think I did highlight certain sections in there to show the court that there are limits to how much funding each group can receive for fiscal year. As you can see, the contractual items, the maximum amount is $2,000 per student organization in that fiscal year, but exceptions can be made on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, some student groups will have higher contracts to be requested. And the board did know these bylaws and of these guidelines and did follow them, and votes were done in 2/3 majority. Also, back to February 28th meeting minutes, Exhibit E now. You can see that the board was informed, this is Section 9 announcement, the board was informed by...
Which minutes are these?
These are February 28th, so it was in the first exhibit. In the announcement, the board was informed, think of other guidelines, other, different limitations to consider during D-Day. So they did have to think of this. They're forewarned beforehand. And then moving on to Exhibit F, which is now the March 1st meeting minutes, Section 7, Item C, guidelines. You can see that the chair said, possible guidelines should have been thought about, and then it goes through what these guidelines were. S&E,
$100 or less could be approved. The board agreed with that. Committed items needed to be well defined and have a good reason for having it. Honorarium, because of the range in honorarium requests, it's decided by the board that that would be handled in a case-by-case situation. Contractual items needed to be well defined. Food for recruitment meetings was going to be aimed for one meeting per semester at $100. And travel, just like contractual and committed, needed to be well defined. And the board was going to review what was presented, or did review what was presented to them when students presented their budget. As I had said before, Exhibit G, two kind summary of how the board handled procedures on D-Day, expresses that there was organization, civil, everything was discussed, there was limitations placed on this. There's another support that the board did come up with guidelines within the meeting that was with all the information I just provided, CFAC firmly stands behind the argument that we had established sets of guidelines that were applied to all student budgets, and that CFAC also reviewed the budget section by section. I can go further and briefly outline the process in which student organizations go through budget creation. It starts in October. I did submit a timeline to the court last year, the CFAC 2007-2008 timeline. Come further in my argument, but there's a timeline, and that does point out that all the orgs get their info the same day via posting it on the CFAC website. There is a budget presentation by the chair and vice chair explaining to organizations how budgets should be created and other information that the chair and vice chair see fit to provide student groups. Then all budgets are due on the same day. That final deadline, which I think was October 31st last
3 p.m.
October 31st, 3 p.m. of Thursday. That's final for everybody. If your budget's not in by then, it will not be taken. And all the orgs present their budget. If their budget is $1,000 or more, that is in the CFAC bylaws, which most of the student budgets last year were $1,000 or more. And that means that each student group has a scheduled time to come before the CFAC board from November through February up to D-Day to present their budget. And in those meetings, the student group leaders who present their budget have the time to explain what is in their budget, why it is in their budget, history of their organization, how many members they have. The board then also, the members of the board, have a time to ask questions. Common questions that were asked were, how many members do you have? Have you done this program before? Have you taken this trip before? Have you thought of other alternatives for fundraising? Have you thought of other alternatives for that speaker? The questions are quite a few, and the same set of questions is asked to every single group, so basic ones that go through their budgets. And some get a little more detailed, depends on what the group asks for. After a budget presentation, all the student organization budgets are reviewed and voted on D-Day. Budgets are not voted on at any other time. The board has that one Saturday where they sit down and they go through each budget at each moment in different time and vote on them. All organizations receive a letter from the chair and vice chair explaining what was given to them in their budget and that they can always come back for contingency requests. And finally, all orgs are welcome to submit a contingency request next fiscal year. If there was an item that they felt strongly about funding, and when they have more information, when the program would be
be presented, they can come back to CFAC to fill out contingency requests and request that money again. There's nothing to stop them from doing that. That is the process of student organization budget. The second issue, well, not even the second issue, but we'll kind of just also explain that CFAC has to follow lots of procedures. We not only, you know, have to follow those guidelines that we create, but we also have to follow the SGA Constitution and our own bylaws. And that means within our own bylaws, Article 4, Section C, Item 2, we must follow Wisconsin Open Meeting Law. I submitted Exhibit H is our guidelines, and I pointed out that section. And Exhibit I is the two different statutes. There's multiple statutes for Wisconsin Open Meeting Law, but I just did two as an example, one that establishes meetings, what a meeting is, and what quorum is, those are things that CFAC has to follow to function on D-Day and to function in their weekly meetings. And the other statute is about ballot voting and records. And CFAC has to follow, you know, roll call votes when making formal monetary decisions. And motions and votes must be recorded, and that's what I'm going to set for.
You have about a minute left, Ms. Gallagher.
A minute. I guess the last thing I'd like to present is the student organization budget spreadsheet. I gave you guys the requested, allocated, and differences from 2008, 2009 budget. You know, all the orgs request different budgets. It's a wide range. No budget requests the same amount. In each area. Nobody can request exactly the same in F&E. Therefore, CFAC must use discretion, their judgment, on the cost effectiveness of each section, but also must not overstep the org's right to function as they fit. CFAC does not want to pick and choose what speakers they see fit that the group should have, but more the amount. CFAC is about the amount, really not who's presenting. Sometimes groups will make it easy for CFAC and rank. We would like this to be our number one speaker. Sometimes that does not happen, and CFAC last year, the board did not see fit for them to pick somebody, certain events over another event. And therefore, would fund all events, but only limit the amount of money that could be put towards whichever event the group still felt that was more important to them.
That's time, Ms. Galligan. Ms. Cohen, you have about 10 minutes left to speak if you'd like.
Okay. There are a few things that I would like to address. It was just mentioned that certain orgs were dealt with on a case-by-case basis. Yes, BSU was made aware of the ground rules, contingency contractual amount that we could not exceed. But it was just mentioned that it's taken on, but in some cases it was case-by-case basis. What we have it's a fundamental issue of who can be taken as case-by-case. What dictates that decision? And then once it is case by case, how is it decided then that that particular org can exceed the $2,000 limit? Obviously, with some of these orgs getting, you know, $20,000, $50,000, obviously there was some exceeding done. What dictates that? And it is our opinion that there needs to be a set of guidelines. I'm very first to that again because that's a fundamental issue. Also, the orgs were not treated the same, because if they were treated the same, every org would have got a lump sum of $2,000. We got the lump sum of $2,000. BSU got the lump sum of $2,000, not every org. How did we not qualify to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis? There's no justification. There's no referral to any kind of objective ruling. It was just stated, judgment of cost effectiveness. Where are the guidelines that say this is cost effective? This is what we are going to use to to, as a rule, to measure these budgets again. There's the only procedural guidelines that we were presented with is that contingency is $100, contractual is $200. As far as contingency goes, the point of presenting a yearly and annual budget is so that you have an idea of what you have to work with for that following year. Yes, we do have the option to go back and do contingencies, but when you're doing when you're planning large events, when you're getting things together for the year, you want to know how much you have to work with so you can fundraise, so you can plan your contingency report. I do not believe that the opportunity that orgs have to go back and do contingency justifies undercutting a budget so severely as ours was undercut. 60%, and these are programs that are beneficial to our campus. These are, as a whole, enrichment, diversity, recruitment, retention, bridging cultural gaps. You know, we give back to the community. We do things that are very beneficial to the community and the campus as a whole. And I cannot accept that because we can go back to contractual that justifies undercutting our programs without giving us justification. And for treating us differently. We were given a $2,000 lump sum. Other orgs were not. Other orgs were considered program by program. I cannot accept the section by section argument because within each section is a list of programs. And to adequately judge a section, you are going to need to review these programs. And there's no evidence that affected that for us. In our budget that was given back to us, there's a lot of blank pages. There was... and then at the bottom was $2,000 used as you see fit, and that's not the standard that was applied to other organizations. So I again we have to go back to the fundamental argument that yes, there are guidelines for how the meetings are supposed to work. There are guidelines that say we cannot exceed certain amounts, but how are you coming to these exact amounts? What can you then say justifies cutting this program versus not this program? Cost effectiveness, that's vague. We have to judge what is cost effective. That is very vague. And without a set of guidelines that dictate what cost effective means, where are we going to give exceptions? Where are we going to do a case by case? If you end up with the kind of numbers that were granted this last allocation period, with some orgs receiving 13%, some orgs receiving 20%, some 40%, some 90%, and a whole bunch of 100%, no real justification. And then on top of that, when orgs attempted to appeal due to the concerns that we had about these cuts, also due to the lack of communication that TUSAC had with us about why these cuts were made, we were denied. Four of the organizations that appealed, all four were denied our opportunity to appeal. So the issue is really a lack of a consistent, objective guideline in determining the numbers in the end, a lack of transparency. The only evidence that we have, the only records that we have, knowing what went on D-Day, are now being saying that we can't use them because they're incomplete. There's no transparency. There's no oversight. And there's no accountability because we have a broken appeal system. And these are the fundamental things that we find that need to be addressed. And though SUSAC has made attempts to address these issues, we believe that there needs to be a push behind it. There needs to be an urgency placed on this. We are all contributing student fees. Every board deserves to have their voice heard and to have the peace of mind of knowing that funds were distributed fairly, consistently, every time. And have a justification, if you got cut, this is why. And we apply the same principle to every org. And then if there's still an issue, we should have the right to appeal. So these are the fundamental concerns that we have.
Cedric, would you like to say anything?
Okay. We will have a rebuttal by the petitioner, or excuse me, the respondent.
Okay.
Five minutes, yep.
Okay. First, the lack of information outlined the contractual $50,000 lump sum. I guess in general, what I'd like to address is what is being requested is the formula. This guideline on specific how this defect comes to the exact, you know, what the cost effectiveness mean and stuff like that is a formula that would be applied to all student organizations. And you can't look, or you shouldn't look at percent. If you look at the budget, you can obviously tell the budget range from, you know, about $100,000 down to like thousands, $250, stuff like that. You can't put those budgets into a specific formula to make sure everybody gets an equal percent.
The point I want to bring up is the Board of Regents has proclaimed that the SUPAC will be shall be a committee of students. What petitioners are looking for is a formula, is more stricter guidelines. That's not what the Board of Regents has intended this committee to exist for.
Did you
want to
bring
in document F-15, it is the Board of Regents' policy on segregated fees. BSU talks about the lump sum payments. It is our belief that it has been misinterpreted as, in addition, in with that, that says lump sum payments to student organizations are not allowed, as opposed to payments for specific purposes supported by invoices. The invoices part suggests that our interpretation of because it says invoices means we can't give you $500 and you can just go with it. That process exists within the organization finance office, as OFO is not allowed to hand out any money without an invoice. Thus, a lump sum is not being handed out.
And with the eight funding of, it was choose, you know, how many out of the eight programs is $2,000. So in a sense, all eight programs were approved by the SUPAC board. We understood what they were requesting, and we just couldn't request that total. So we felt that since we didn't have the information from BSU about which one they preferred over maybe some of the others, that we would let them choose this program. We do not want to micromanage student organizations. It's not SUPAC's job to tell a student organization you need to have this program or have that program. SUPAC's job is to make sure that the student fees are being used in a proper manner, you know, that it's open to all students, that advertising is going to be there, that the student organizations understand, you know, how to use this properly.
Something else to mention is the yearly budget process exists. Ms. Cohane was talking about how it doesn't make sense for a budget to go through SUPAC and then have it said come back to for a contingency request. That does not make sense. And I'll admit, if that's the only reason that contingency exists, that doesn't make sense. Contingency also exists as a process to ensure viewpoint neutrality and to follow processes. You have a chance to request once again to a brand new board that will have new members, the same request to make sure that they're not looking at things in a view, not looking at things viewpoint, on viewpoint neutral.
Actually, Ms. Galligan, okay. Your time is up for a rebuttal. Ms. Cohane, you have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Okay.
BSU does not wish to micromanage different orgs. We understand and we agree that each org needs to have the freedom to present a diverse budget. That brings great, you know, diversity to our campus program. What is important is that the way that we are reaching these numbers is fair, is accurate, is consistent, and there's a way for accountability. We don't want to micromanage. We want people to have the freedom to do, you know, what is in their missions of their org. So that's not
policy not upheld by the organization or whatever the case may be, just that, you know, a strict, more set of strict procedural guidelines also justify these reasons.
No, we. If you don't have anything further to say on rebuttal, the justices will then ask their questions for roughly 20 minutes or so. Might go a little bit less depending on what we have prepared, and then afterwards you guys can give your 2-minute conclusion. So, we'll move into question A. This is everybody's favorite part. So, who wants to start?
Well, I guess I'll start. I have a question as far as your case by case. You said you have to have a 2/3 majority vote to stray from the guidelines case by case. Would that vote be done in committee of a whole? I'm not entirely familiar with the committee of a whole, but I do understand, you know, what needs to be said. If that vote was taken, would that have been recorded in the minutes and outside of committee of the whole?
Votes are never taken within committee of the whole. The 2/3 majority, we would never make in the official vote during committee of the whole. The only cases that we make it are outside of committee of the whole. That's the only time we have a motion for anything.
And that would be in the minutes. If you said I make a motion, for example, to go over the guideline of $2,500 for travel, let's say.
It would not be in that wording. It would be as a result. In order for the vote to succeed, it would need 2/3 majority if it violated any guideline.
So, when a group motion, or when feedback motions to approve something that would go over a guideline, that vote needs to pass by 2/3 majority.
So you don't say a specific motion to go above the guideline. You, in order to approve it, okay, let's see if I can word this a little bit better. Let's say if you said, okay, great, we think they should get, this is a great thing, so they should get $3,000 for travel. You wouldn't say a separate vote to go case by case with this and then another vote to approve it. You pretty much say this is a case by case because over 2/3 the majority agreed with that allocation of $3,000.
I have a question for Supak as well, and this is going off of Mr. Kale's interpretation of the Board of Regents policies. Would you say that student orgs can request gifts within their budget?
Gifts,
donations, contributions. Can they request that?
They can request that, yes.
Would you approve something like that?
No.
Would you approve anything like meals, travel? Is that part of what it is you can approve?
Travel, you said meals within travel.
Well, travel.
Travel, yeah.
Separate, meals, separate.
Because it's a guideline thing.
Okay.
Somebody's traveling.
But is this something that you can approve?
Yes.
Okay. Why is it that the lump sum doesn't apply to you then and that it only applies to OFL? I see what you're saying, that the history behind it is that student orgs used to come and get, from what the court cases say, they used to come and get receipts for whatever they used to spend. And that's the way it used to be. It was a reimbursement system. Why is it that the lump sum doesn't apply to you? Why do you think the context is only for OFL and not for SUFAC?
I think it's a misunderstanding of the relationship between SUFAC and OFL. OFL handles all of SUFAC's allocations. They are essentially the idea that has been presented is they are the accountants. They are the ones that will make sure the invoices are there. They will be the ones that make sure the money is actually being spent in the appropriate means that SUFAC is intended to be spent. I think that answers it. Tell me if it does or not.
What if the student organization submitted a invoice to you as a part of their requested budget? Just an invoice. What if they talk to someone and they, not an invoice, maybe, what's the word I'm looking for?
An estimate.
Yeah, that's what a budget is. That's the information that the board likes to see, and that's something that
the board questions, you know, how did you come up with this money? Or not this money, how did you come up with this number? You know, who did you talk to? Did you talk to Grant Winslow, who handles all the contracts, you know? How did you figure out what that hotel room was going to cost? Did you go to OFO? Was that a state rate hotel room, or did you interview Expedia.com?
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the numbers things that Suback needs to look at.
I'm just confused, and this could be for either party, I suppose, because in the Board of Regents policy it says inappropriate SUFAC expenditures. Well, the money comes from SUFAC. Technically, OFO expends the money, but it's still an expenditure. You're still giving them money, so I'm still trying to understand.
What we're not doing, what's happening, the process is that has been established on this campus, is that we will not give out $500. We will not give out just money without a receipt.
Okay. The next question would then be, when you allocated the $2,000, did you then break it up into certain categories, like $500 goes for the band, $500 goes for this, that? Did you do that, or is it just, here's your $2,000, spend it whatever way you wish?
In those requested events, it was $2,000. We don't know which event is more important to you, because they did present, you know, 8 different events, speaker, fashion show, I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. But when the board looked at those 8 different events, you know, which one do they want to fund, we're not sure, the idea was $2,000, pick 2 or 3 or 1 of those events to spend that $2,000.
That add up to
$2,000.
Okay, that's okay. I follow your reasoning for that. However, I think BSU asked for $930 for their top ranked contract. You double funded that, essentially. You gave them twice the amount. Why is it that you wouldn't fund maybe a couple other contracts instead of giving them double the money for their top rated one?
We didn't know. They didn't top rate one. We didn't have that information.
You didn't ask that during...
The question was asked, which ones do you, and the information was given. I know I've reviewed my notes, and other members of that board have reviewed their notes, and we had not gotten that information. We would have used the minutes, but they were...
Do you typically overfund, do you typically grant over what student org requests?
No.
So this is kind of... anomaly, could say?
No, it's not, because the board...
But it is then, because you just said that you don't usually, or you don't give more money to a contract than what they requested, so
yeah.
This is an anomaly, so I'm just wondering why it is they were given $2,000 for this contract in a lump sum form, when they only requested
$930. I think what it is the idea is not that here's $930, we're going to give $2,000 put on that program. It's here's $2,000 to put on a collection of those programs that will add up for what you presented. So within the budget, it was you said this would cost $500, this would cost $1,000, this would cost $500, okay, this would cost $2,000. Okay, you can choose between the $2,000 or the $1,000 and the two $500s. I mean, you can mix and match how it would work. For which programs you weren't supposed to exceed the amount that you requested for the program.
But you're only funding one program then, because if you're going to give over the amount
No.
that they requested, but you only gave it to the fashion show. Why is it that
we didn't just approve the fashion show? We approved all of their.
That's not the way it's stated in the budget, though. It's actually when you look at the budget, it says $2,000 just for the fashion show,
yeah.
And that, I think this is where it gets tricky because. If you're giving $2,000 for all their contracts, they would fund each contract that they wanted, but right in the budget it says $2,000 for the fashion show. That's all that's been funded. And that's why I think maybe there's a miscommunication here, or...
Can I just ask a question for clarification?
Yeah.
Ms. Gallia is saying that they were awarded a lump sum because they didn't want to prioritize the events to be with you. But it's my understanding that when BSU submitted their contractual worksheet, they submitted the event in order of priority, one being the highest and six being the lowest. Is that right?
Yes.
We were never given that information.
Is that typical that organizations do that? They think that there have been an order of priority?
No.
It's moving housing.
Oh,
and
so, okay.
Program number one does not mean that that's the org's first program. When SUFAC's understanding. That's why we asked them to present their budgets to us. I mean, if it was that way, we would never have to really hear the meaning behind their budgets. They have that little line to explain, but the budget form is just set up a spot to put those things in. No, it's not required that they have to put student organizations put the number one program as program number one.
Okay. Does that answer
your
question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
I can answer your question.
Okay.
What you were looking at is OFO's records.
Right.
So what they have down as notes to themselves is Fashion for Hope promotions. This was the lump sum idea was something that these officers had not dealt with yet, and so they had in my understanding they had put it down as this just so that they could reference it so they would have some idea of what was being talked about at the time. All it is their notes, not what SUFAC ended up saying.
Ms. Cohen,
you're looking at this, right?
Right, yes.
This, yeah, this is OFO's notes. I guess you have to ask OFO why it is stated as is.
Okay. Ms. Cohen, is it your understanding that your seven other contracts were funded?
It is my interpretation that it is standard that in a budget, each program is given attention, is given a number that they can spend on that particular program. We were not. We were given a lump sum, which implies or suggests that perhaps our budget was not given proper consideration through each program. Yes, Fashion for Hope is our top program. It's the first one of the year. That's what we, you know, needed the funding for the most. But what happened was there wasn't given the consideration for any of our other events, and we believe therefore we were underfunded, and that was treating us in a different manner than is usually the case. And that's my understanding from attending meetings of SUFAC and getting that interpretation from the members themselves.
So just for one more clarification, no program on a budget are supposed to be ranked at all?
Not when the org writes up their budget.
Does SUFAC have any knowledge of ranking a program?
When we ask the question, we do ask the question to organizations when they present. Could you please rank in order from your number one choice to least? Programs or travel, and most organizations will do it, and some will refuse to rank them. And that information that we acquired during that budget presentation is the information that we have to work with on D-Day.
So the budget presentation isn't on D-Day.
No.
On a different day.
All the orgs don't present on D-Day. What happens throughout November to February, on Thursday when SUFAC meets, there'll be about six different organizations who will come present their budget and explain to the board what each thing is being requested for, and the board then will ask questions about stuff like that. Rank your number one program, or number one travel trip, or number one food request.
Is it required they go to that?
Yes. If they have a budget over $1,000, it is required.
BSU, did you attend that?
Yes. And we were not asked to rank. We were asked to rank our trip, and we did provide an answer for that. We were not asked to rank our trip. They have the opportunity to do that, but did not.
I have one question for SUFAC. In the minutes, and I think this is maybe why there was some confusion. In the minutes, it talks about just the fashion show, and then there was the suggestion to give that $2,000. I just lost my train of thought. Well, I understand that, but this is the way it is. There was not any other consideration of the seven other contracts this is what it says in the minutes, this is what it seems like in the minutes, that you guys had discussed the fashion show, decided on amount, and then that was it. There was no other consideration of the other contract?
I can tell you, as a board member, as participant, Senator, at D-Day, I talked more about those items.
There was discussion about everything.
As members, I guess we can tell you, I don't know if you take that into consideration, but at the time last year during D-Day, I was Senator, member of SUFAC, and that was an at-large member, and that we did discuss these budgets, and from my memory, I know I discussed more than just the fashion show for Hope.
Yeah.
You can respond to that.
If you're doing hearsay, I have a member that personally approached me the day after D-Day and told me that our budget was not given the proper procedure, was not given the proper time, and it actually angered the members to the point where he was presenting it in our behalf during the appeals. So if we're going by hearsay, I have contradictory statements from other members on that board. Contradictory board.
And consideration our
state. Yeah.
Is Paul present, who was listed on the minutes for there was no roll call minutes for SUFAC April 17th, but I believe he was quoted. Is he not here?
Transfer school attending UW Platteville.
Do you recall what Pa's concern was? He did mention that there might have been an issue with procedure. I assume it's because of the lump sum and that you guys mentioned something
to the
effect of
April
moving
17th.
Through these budgets fast. Do you remember what that conversation was about, by any chance?
April 17th appeals.
It was April 17th meeting minutes for SUFAC under Section 7, Part C on the third page about mid-through. You did say that that some could argue something about a lump sum and it could be a violation or procedure.
It's on the third page of
OFO said that the request can still be grouped and the process can still be followed.
The idea was, from my understanding, Pa was bringing up a concern, and then it was a general concern. It was talked about, it was discussed, OFO brought up the point that it can
so be. He was concerned about giving or approving budgets just by section, that you're just approving one number, but you're reviewing it line by line. Is that what his concern was?
I think his actual concern was, I believe, specifically with VSU contractual lump, the $2,000 approval. I believe that was his actual concern.
Okay.
I don't know his personal beliefs, or I don't remember the actual articulation. I'm not recalling it being expanded upon.
Well, we'll take the argument on its face. We're not going to assume anything because we can't do that. If the court were to look at other minutes and go through these minutes a little bit more carefully, would we come across anything that would suggest that you have paid attention to each contract a little bit more carefully than BSU's, where you're, even though it's in the minutes and only you discuss one, but you say you have discussed more. If we were to go through this a little bit more carefully, would we discover that you have actually discussed some budgets more in depth?
I would assume that the minutes would reflect that.
Okay.
I can't guarantee it.
Do you guys take an electronic recording of D-Day or anything beyond an administrative assistant?
We do not. Something we're looking into, but we're not.
How does SUFAC determine cost effectiveness when going through the budgets?
When going through each of the budgets, is presented. Sometimes you just look at how many students are being provided a service to UNITEM.
Are you, sorry, I'm not going to interrupt, but I just want to make aware that, are you aware that you can't make decisions on budgets by the number of students in an org?
No, and yeah, it's not by the number of students in an org. It's about a lot of things.
Okay.
What's presented, you know, reasons for it. I guess we don't take into consideration, like, you know, the mission and stuff like that. That would be a violation of viewpoint neutrality. We just try to look at, five students attending a trip. Yeah, the trip doesn't. Your question is, how do we do cost effectiveness? I guess it really depends on what is being requested. There's so many different requests. I can give you examples, but because things range so much, I guess the purpose of feedback is to take into consideration all the information that the org presents. Right now, an example escaped in my head. I guess it's just things like, you know,
with travel trips, I know specifically it was many times it was looked at as how much is this per student that can go on this. With several committed requests, it was looked at how many students is the expected attendance for this event based on the price of it. And we kind of broke it down by per student and how much it was compared to the total cost and guidelines that we're supposed to follow. I hate to say that it's complex enough that we need individual minds looking at it, and I think it is. It does have to be looked at from multiple different angles. From looking at guidelines to per student, towards the total cost of the trip, to other.
I just have a question of clarification. You provided us, I have lost count of the letters, or even, I think it was part of CFAC budget request, the full budget request for BSU. I believe it was part of this.
Okay.
The letter. And I think this was in back of it. You highlighted the Black Student Union for a contingency request. Again, I'm not familiar with when this was made. For $1,600 was requested, and $1,600 was allocated. However, on the letter dated March 25th, this is that they were awarded $100 in contingency. How come those aren't equal?
I didn't get to explain the contingency requesting. That was from 2007-2008. I submitted that to show that groups can come at any time and request a certain amount of money. That was for a soul food dinner food request for last year. It was not part of the fiscal year of the budget that they requested. It was for the 2007-2008 fiscal year. The budget that we're discussing is for the 2008-2009 fiscal year. So that's why those numbers don't match up.
So these are different years.
Yeah, I just wanted to show, you know, many groups come to CFAC with different requests and, you know, funding and different reasons.
Okay, my questions are for the BSU and CFAC, and they have to do with guidelines and policies. One of the BSU's understanding of SUFAC's guidelines and policies, as well as SUFAC's process of informing student boards about these guidelines and policies. The first set of questions go to the BSU. Number one, what explanation of SUFAC funding process was provided to you in advance?
There was a short bulleted summary. It's part of the first page when you submit a budget. I don't know why I keep losing things, but
there's small tables.
Okay. This short summary. $10,000. These were the only specified guidelines that we were given. Nothing about, you know, how actual decisions are being made.
And this was given to you ahead of time?
It's provided when you go to the budget. That was provided for you. As far as the bylaws, there's nothing, and also, yeah, so that was it.
Okay. Was the information on the SUFAC process and timeline provided to you in writing as well as the website, or is it just in writing? Were you directed to any online resource of SUFAC ahead of time?
There is counseling provided for orgs who are submitting budgets. Basically, that you need to be cost effective, that you need to provide justification and be prepared to answer questions that they'll ask you about the numbers and where you're getting your figures.
Okay. What information, if any, was shared at your org hearing before SUFAC about the guidelines that SUFAC uses to make allocation decisions? This is right with SUFAC, not before the case. You know, did there was any information shared during the hearing about their guidelines and procedures?
Before D-Day or before?
No, this was, I believe, on D-Day when you guys were out there requesting your funds.
When you were presenting and trying to justify your budget, that's when he's talking about.
Oh,
yeah.
Is
what information, if any, was shared at your org hearing before SUFAC about the guidelines that SUFAC uses to make allocation decisions?
No, there was not.
None?
Basically just questions about where we found our numbers.
Okay. What do you think was the basis or rationale for SUFAC's decision about the VSU org budget?
Well, we believe that the budget just was not given the attention that it required, that it was entitled to, and had it been given a little more attention, had they looked into our activities, the value that they have on this campus, the amount of students that they expect, that our programs are consistent with the university's overall mission at recruiting and retention of multicultural students, bridging multicultural gaps. I believe that they would have considered a little more how our activities and how these activities specifically tie into enriching this campus and building relationships between students. I think that they would have arrived at a different
I don't know if you didn't get my question clearly. The question is, what do you think was the basis or rationale for SUFAC's decision? Maybe I should rephrase that and say, do you think there was any basis or any rationale behind SUFAC's decision about the VSU board budget?
Nothing based on a consistent set of guidelines. We were not providing any rationale as to why certain programs were cut, why certain trips weren't funded. We were not given any concrete rationale for this whatsoever. As a matter of fact, when we appealed, we received minimal correspondence from SUFAC. We had questions. We were trying to reach out and get answers, and we received minimal. We received confusion from them to begin with, and then just really no justification whatsoever.
Finally, do you think SUFAC's rationale for its allocation to BSU was in some way inconsistent with its guidelines?
Yes.
If so, specifically, in what way?
Well, specifically, each org deserves equal treatment, deserves to have its points considered thoroughly. That was not maintained. When decisions are made, it should be in a consistent fashion. Us getting a 2,000 lump sum and other words not is not consistent. The line by line is okay. I'm losing my train.
Just basically on the whole fact that if you are going to treat a certain org a certain way and providing them with lump sum to fund for all their planned activities for academic year, approach the other organizations that same manner. And if even if you don't, and you just treat a certain org that way, provide a reason for that, you know, so that there's no confusion, there's no misinterpretation of why the large sum was given.
Okay. Excuse me. I'll finish it up this way. It's a yes or no answer. Do you think SUFAC's rationale for the allocation was consistent with the guidelines or not? Simply.
No.
No. Okay, thanks a lot. These are my questions for SUFAC.
We have about 5 more minutes for questioning, so I just want to make
fine.
That note.
As long as they're quick with their answers, we should be out of here. Number one, was your process of budget submission, deliberation, and decision-making communicated to the DSU and other orgs that request funding in advance?
Yes. It's communicated via email, through the Office of Student Life, as well as the Organization Finance Office lets orgs know as they come in during the month of October.
In your communication of your allocation decision of DSU, did you provide reason or rationale for the funding decision?
The decision letter?
No, I think he's asking, did you guys provide any reasons why the budget was cut? We don't have enough money to go around, or your justification wasn't sufficient. I think, is that what you're trying to get at, Priya?
Yeah, in the communication of your allocation decision of DSU, so this is after you've made the allocation. You provide reasons or rationale for the allocation.
What happens is segregated university fee allocation. SUFAC is commanded that we have to provide them decision letters. We have to let them know what the final totals are, as well as let them know of why.
So this goes back to the letter you talked about.
Yes, the decision letter. What happens is that decision letter is sent out via physical piece of paper as well as a digital piece of paper. It was the choice of that board and that executive, that administrative body at that year, to include the numbers and include a statement. If you have any concerns or questions, please contact us. And that was how we communicated.
All right. Thank you. Can you explain how the rationale you communicated to the DSU was justified by your own guidelines? Basically, how your explanation for the funding decision is justified by your guidelines. You go by.
Contact us if you have any questions regarding your request. I don't know of the communication that went on between DSU and the chair of last year.
Yeah, I tend to think this is beyond the scope of what it is they can answer, because they were not the chair or the vice chair at that time. Unless you can provide a sufficient answer, that's okay.
No,
but if
I can't provide that, but I do want to say in this communication, we do acknowledge that that could have been a huge issue. And as chair and vice chair this year, we've learned a lesson, I guess, from things, how things can spiral out of control with lack of communication. And we are honestly trying our hardest to remedy that with a better student organization budget presentation. We're going to make sure that the letters are a lot better than before. But I can't answer that question. I wasn't in the leadership position at that time.
Doesn't really answer my question, but we can move on. Did you communicate the option and process of requesting additional funding beyond the initial allocation?
What was the question, sorry?
Did you communicate the option? Process of requesting additional funding.
In the decision letter, it also goes over. Please note that unless otherwise stated, items cut from your budget can still receive SUFAC funding by submitting a separate contingency contractual travel or food request form during the next fiscal year.
And finally, was your rationale for allocation consistent with your guidelines and policies? I know you mentioned to us that SUFAC has guidelines and policies that it goes by.
They were. I know that this lump sum issue was something that it is a little new how the board handled it, but if there was no guidelines, $2,000 is the maximum limit fiscal year. $2,000 was what was allocated. Other groups were also given lump sum to do a place off that to take their program. I don't want to bring up extra evidence. We just have our other notes here. But I know other groups are given lump sums.
One more question for each of us, and we'll try and wrap it up.
For the lumps, when we're talking about lump sum for other organizations, I don't want to necessarily question how you came up with the amounts, but those lump sums, you said you go by section by section. Do you do any line by line?
We have to look at what's being requested. So the board members, each board member does look at every single program. Number at the bottom is the number that we take.
So the lump sum is based on
what was put up
the line by line.
Yeah.
So those numbers somehow add to that lump sum.
What I can tell you is that the lump sums never, the total lump sums never set it up so that they couldn't do a maximum program. That was traditionally the minimum of the lump sum was done. Was the maximum amount of the largest single program to allow them that choice to still do that one program. So let's say in this situation, if one of their programs is $3,000 and the rest were less than that, the lump sum would have been approximately $3,000, unless the board disagreed with the $3,000 program.
Why wouldn't the board just decide on an amount and then fund the contracts that fall into that amount? So if three contracts fall into $2,000, why don't you just fund the first three contracts and say, sorry, we're not going to fund the other four?
It comes down to SUFAC didn't have, in these situations, SUFAC didn't have a problem with programs as a whole. They had a problem with the...
Then what's the point of breaking the programs then?
Do you understand that the group's requesting for information?
In this situation, it was we didn't know which programs were ranked. Normally, what would happen is we would rank, and then we know what those programs are, so we can say, okay, you get this much, and this much, because those were your top three. In this situation, it was we didn't know what the top three were, so we were unable at the time to say, okay, here's what the top three equate to. So in this situation, it was, all right, here's $2,000 for you to work out what your top three are, because you will obviously know amongst yourselves what your top three are.
My last question, and that was more of a follow-up just from what Justice Sipinski was saying. My last question is actually for BSU. Ms. Cohen, you said that other student organization budgets were not allocated the same way as BSU was, and that Mr. Kale had kind of mentioned that if the court were to go through the minutes, that we would find that SUFAC may have gone through more contracts a little bit more thoroughly than BSU. Can you give us, you know, offhand, any examples of how your budget was treated differently than any other organization budgets?
Well, unfortunately, we were not able to obtain specific allocations. Like the letter that was mentioned before, after the distribution, had the breakdown of what exactly was funded, and unfortunately we weren't able to obtain that for other orgs, otherwise we would be able to provide concrete evidence. It was my interpretation from the discussion that was had at the appeals meeting that it was not the case that other groups got lump sums. I would look at the larger groups that got larger sums of money, and in the DDA minutes, there is considerably more time given to the other programs.
So thank you guys for your responses, your respondents, petitioners. I have no more questions for any of you.
Justice Schmidt?
No.
The last question, and this is from everybody, is what it is you'd like the court to do, because there's actually nothing in the SGA Constitution or the Board of Regents that says what it is we can do about this. So obviously you have your own set of plans. 30 seconds, maybe tell us what it is you'd like to do, because people are itching to get out of here, I can tell. And then give a quick closing statement, and then we will adjourn. So we'll start with the petitioner.
We have five specific outline things that we would like for the court to do. I understand that you might not have the authority to do all of these, but these are suggestions. That BSU and any other org who would choose to do so would have a chance to have their appeal go through and have their budget re-examined for the 2008-2009 academic year. Also, that SUFAC be required to create and implement a set of guidelines in its decision-making process concerning org budget. Not micromanagement, but consistency and fairness in the decision-making process. That appeal process be amended so that it serves student orgs and gives orgs the opportunity to appeal when concerned. Ultimately, SUFAC makes the final decision on whether or not you can appeal. And in our case, we were not given the opportunity and we're not given a chance to make our case at either of the appeal proceedings. Fourthly, we would like more complete public records be made available of SUFAC activities, particularly on D-Day, so that we would have a reference to go back to and say that things were done in a proper manner. And fifthly, we would like a separate, and this is something that SUFAC is pursuing, which is commendable of them, separate third-party review. A committee or some third party be established to be able to take up appeals, arguments, and other questions that arise about SUFAC conduct.
And the respondent.
Okay. I guess I would just like to present to you guys a set of evidence. This is the
unless we've already discussed this, then the court's not going to accept it.
Well, this is all the information about what is in process already. The Senate ad hoc agenda, who is looking into the Constitution and the way SGA and SUFAC handle each other, the appeal system. It also has the task force, which is handling an honorariums issue, and it has SUFAC agendas where we show that we have gone through our guidelines, and we also have the new additions to the guidelines that were made this September, and it also has our timeline for 2008-2009, and if you our timeline was for the students, but there is always time. We will be reviewing bylaws and guidelines.
We will accept this.
Would you say that's what SUFAC wants as a way forward?
Well, I guess I want to present that this issue is being remedied. We're taking active steps to make sure that organizations are informed and that our guidelines are updated, that our bylaws are updated. The chair and vice chair are taking active steps to make sure all members are informed, that all student organizations are informed. And I guess, in a sense, what we'd like to see come out of this is that this is okay, that SGA can handle the review, that the steps SGA and SUFAC are taking for review of SUFAC, that is sufficient.
We will admit there might have been some miscommunication, and for lack of miscommunication, all we can say is we're trying to improve it.
Okay. We'll move into closing statements. I'm going to limit this to a minute. I know it's maybe not enough time, but you'll just have to make it quick and short. So we'll start with Ms. Cohen.
It's definitely commendable as you said, it's taking the steps to make changes. But as is appearing by their arguments, they are unwilling to admit that really anything was a problem to begin with. So I'm not convinced that they're going to be taking a proper step to address a problem that they don't admit exists. That's why we are asking the court to please hand down recommendations and put the imperative on them that this is addressed so that we're making sure that things are done fairly.
your guidelines are strict and implemented quite sufficiently, but as far as our argument, we just want to stress that a more accurate procedure, set of procedures be implemented when it comes to handing out budgeting and funding for organizations.
Thank you. Ms. Galligan and Mr. Kelly.
In conclusion, Segregated University Allocation Committee does have guidelines, does have a process for handling student organization budgets on D-Day and in their weekly meetings. SUVAC does follow their bylaws, their guidelines, SGA Constitution, Board Regents policies, Wisconsin state laws, and court decisions. this year, we see that the petitioner has been unable to produce evidence that specifically provides SUVAC and the court with exact procedures that were violated. The lack of evidence, we can't improve our policies or procedure if we don't have specific details on what we violated. As I had said, in light of this information, or in light of the situation, student government has taken up this student issue and is reviewing SUVAC through Senate ad hoc committees, being a student task force, and SUVAC itself is reviewing stuff like that.
It's when it comes down to it, we're more than happy to hear all ideas and suggestions for how procedures should be changed, and we will bring it. We feel as if anything that's suggested to us, if Donnie and I feel like it's at least reasonable, we'll take it to the board. We would be more than happy to.
All right. And thank you both for coming here tonight. The court will deliberate, and we will take into consideration your arguments. Assuming that Justice Sipinski is in the majority, she will release the opinion at her discretion within a reasonable amount of time. You'll be notified of that. And if you have any other questions, feel free to contact the court. Otherwise, this meeting is adjourned.
Yeah,